May it please the Court, Erica Choi for the appellant, Micah Kelly. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. There are many aspects to this case, but it really comes down to a simple question. Did the DEA do what is required by Congress to temporarily schedule ethylene? Congress delegated a limited authority and provided very specific procedures under the temporary scheduling statute. There are basically three things. The DEA must give notice to HHS. It must consider certain factors and make findings about the substance and why it poses an imminent threat to the public safety. And it must comply with a 30-day notice requirement.
It's a question of those. Did you say the DEA did not comply with it?
All of them, Your Honor. The DEA did not transmit.
Because it didn't specify if the law had a biochemical drug. That's the problem.
That plus, in the notice, they didn't even mention isomers to HHS.
And why is that significant, given that presumably HHS knows how this scheduling framework works? Is that Congress specified in the statute itself that this can be subject to sensitive ones, which Schedule 1 is just carrying with the isomers? So why would HHS need to be told that by DEA?
Because the HHS has the medical and scientific expertise to be able to say, hold it, some of these substances have potential medical uses, or some of these substances really are, we're advancing, you know, scientific research in these categories. This does not belong on the controlled substance schedule. And apart from that, the statute itself in plain language requires the DEA to give notice.
So it lists the substance, the, let's just call it the predicate substance, which is butylene, right?
Yes.
And we know that if butylene gets onto Schedule 1, and especially if it gets under Schedule 1C, which you carry with it all of the relevant isomers, and HHS knows that that's how the scheduling system is set up, so why, if it's told by DEA, we're looking at butylene, wouldn't HHS know, okay, well, if we're going to give any feedback, we're going to give feedback not only on that one limited substance, but of course all of these relevant isomers as well?
Because that something has isomers doesn't mean that those isomers have anything in common with the substance itself. We can't assume that ethylene is the same as butylene. They're different substances.
I'm talking just from a notice standpoint. You said the defect. You started out and said each one of those three, there's a problem. The defect in the first one you said is actually, well, DEA didn't tell HHS specifically that it was interested in ethylene as well. And I'm saying, why would DEA need to tell HHS that they would already know once they were told that butylene is one of the substances we're looking at, right?
Because if they said isomers, we might not be here. Had they specified these types of positional isomers, we know what they are and we know what they do and they all are dangerous and need to be scheduled. They didn't do it in this case, and I'm confident, having learned more about isomers than I ever thought that I would, for this case, I'm confident that had they said, and it's isomers, HHS would not have let that fly. They would have said, what substances are you talking about? What findings have you made? What exactly are we?
Well, why are you so confident about it?
Because, I'll give the court two examples about isomers that are completely different. One, THC.
I'm talking about in this particular case. You said that if DEA mentioned somehow HHS would say, I don't know, is that what you're telling us?
Oh, no, Your Honor. I'm saying that if the DEA had said butylene plus its isomers, HHS would have said, what isomers? Be more specific.
That's what I'm saying. Why are you so convinced that that would have happened here?
Because the word isomers just captures a universe of so many potential substances.
But that's what happens every time the drug gets listed on Schedule 1.
And that's why the DEA has to be specific. And that's why Congress requires the DEA to do certain things. And Congress actually retains, if you look at the Controlled Substances Act, Congress retains authority over unnamed isomers. And we know that because Congress defines isomers a particular way. Congress defines controlled substances a particular way, and it defines it as substances that are listed in the schedule in the United States Code. It's not what the DEA says, you know, down the line, butylene plus its isomers that we haven't made any findings about or specified. It's just Congress moves those listed, I'm sorry, those temporary regulatory scheduled substances into the code within specific subsections. That's when we know what isomers are controlled, and that's because it's gone through the entire vetting process.
Wait, so would your position be different if DEA had scheduled in Schedule 1 butyl alone and its optical, positional, and geometric isomers, salts, and salts of isomers?
If they had gone through the process from the beginning and specified that, if they had gone through and given notice to HHS in those terms and gone through and made findings in those terms.
As to each and every one of the optical, positional, and geometric isomers and the salts of the isomers.
If they had gone through.
Is there a position to do every one? This is an emergency rulemaking, right?
Yes.
We're dealing with designer drugs like ecstasy, which, as I understand it, can be made from more than one isomer. And your position is that they've got to do the studies on every genetic mutation, if I could use it. And I'm not a scientist, so bear with me.
If they're going to attach criminal penalties, then they need to know and be specific about what substances.
What if they just listed ethyl?
If they had listed ethylene and made the findings, I wouldn't be here, Your Honor. If they knew, and if they knew what ethylene really was, and they had sufficient evidence to go through and do these procedures, I think Congress would have probably scheduled it in 2011. But Congress did not schedule ethylene when given four opportunities to do so. Because, as the government even now still concedes in the 28-J letter that I filed with the court, there's still a lack of information about ethylene.
Well, as I understand it, the problem that the agency is wrestling with is that we have clandestine chemists out here, and apparently they're really good at tweaking the formulas for this stuff and coming up with really noxious hallucinogens. And the agency is rapidly trying to respond to what's going on in the black market and its emergency rulemaking authority. So in this instance, why shouldn't we cut the agency some slack here?
Because the court holds the agency in this specific area. It holds the DEA to a high standard. In hemp industries, the court did not apply Chevron deference because it said, look, the procedure is clear. This is limited authority. And the other thing is that there's a different statute. When there's an unnamed isomer, unnamed substance, that is substantially similar in chemical makeup and similar in terms of its dangerous effects on the user, there's an analog statute. That's a separate case.
Your Honors, Nancy Olson appearing on behalf of the government. May it please the court. Mr. Kelly is challenging the DEA's temporary scheduling order, and the DEA followed all the required procedures for temporarily scheduling butyl alone in this case. And in the notice, the public notice, as well as the final order itself, it scheduled butyl alone and its optical positional and geometric isomers. And Mr. Kelly does not dispute that ethylene is one such isomer. He is mainly challenging whether or not the DEA had to do specific factor analysis on those separate isomers, but there's nothing in the record to suggest the DEA has to do this. DEA, by definition, if you look back to the Controlled Substances Act, Congress includes isomers by definition based on what type of substance it is, for example, a hallucinogenic or an opioid or an opiate derivative. And in this case, DEA did what it does with whether something is temporarily scheduled or permanently scheduled by saying these isomers are appropriate. So it's not ever by factor analysis to include an isomer. It's simply by definition of what the substance is.
One of the problems I had with your position, though, and I think Ms. Troy was getting to it before we moved around with the question, was you've got THC, and as I understand it, there's an isomer that produces progesterone, which obviously has a much different purpose than THC. So unless the agency goes through and does the analysis with regard to every isomer,
Judge Easterbrook's example was a red herring. If you look back, again, it's controlled by definitions. We're not talking about any and all types of isomers that might exist out there. We're talking about Congress and the EA saying, when it's this type of substance, then these type of isomers come along. There's, in the definition, there's specific things that have to be met.
But, for example, but I think their argument is that if you adopt the government's position, as you just articulated it, then you're going to sweep into prohibited conduct substances that may contain isomers that are not dangerous, that do not produce hallucinogenic effects, etc.
So if I may point to the specifics of the definition, one is that they have to be in the same functional group. Another is that there can be no change in chemical functionality, meaning no new chemical functionality or no destruction of an existing chemical functionality. And so this is the definition that says only those things that are really going to act similarly to and create the same dangerous effects, which is exactly why drug dealers are creating them, because they're trying to find a way around it. And so the definition controls, and it's saying it has to basically be chemically the same thing. So you're not going to sweep in something like progesterone. Notably, progesterone is not scheduled at all. THC obviously is. THC is hallucinogenic. In the Controlled Substances Act, it sweeps in these three types of isomers that we're talking about, and it's not progesterone. So just because something is some type of isomer of another thing doesn't mean it's one of these three types that's specifically defined in this drug context of what is or is not an illegal scheduled drug.
Can you address the notice issue? In other words, how does Mr. Kelly found his unlicensed pharmaceutical transactions know that he shouldn't be peddling ethylene in street corners?
With respect to, would you like me to talk more about whether the notice here was specific or just has to be
knowledge? Jacksonville versus the state of Florida, that's sufficient. How does a defendant, I'm assuming Mr. Kelly does not have an advanced brain chemistry.
I think that's probably correct.
So how does he have fair notice that what he's doing violates the law?
If you look at the Hussein case that the government provided in our recent 28-J letter, it talks about a similar issue. There's not a vagueness issue when there's a scienter requirement in the statute. You have to know you're dealing drugs to get in trouble for dealing drugs. And here we have Mr. Kelly purporting to
deal. Even if you don't know the technical chemical terms and so on, if you know that you shouldn't be out there selling ecstasy, that's good enough.
That's correct, Your Honor. We cited even the Ninth Circuit model jury instruction in our brief, which talks about to know that you were dealing specifically a substance or any controlled substance. You don't have to know exactly what it is. In here, he might have thought it was MDMA, but he knew what he was doing. He was dealing drugs, and he got in trouble for that. So the scienter requirement saves that knowledge. And this court has held previously that if something's published in the Code of Federal Regulations, that's sufficient notice. It's public. It's out there. And the DA followed all of its required scheduling steps to get it there.
What about your opponent's flagging of the notice to the judges as not having included isomers? Why is that not a defect that causes problems?
The DA gave in the letter the notice of the 10 synthetic cathinones. And as Your Honor pointed out, the isomers come along by definition, so HHS knows what's going on here. There's never a separate.
How do we, I mean, your report obviously disputes that, so how do we know that HHS doesn't have to be alerted to the fact that DA is not just interested in the substance as well as other isomers?
So, for example, I can point Your Honor to the permanent scheduling of betaline and these other substances. It's happened recently after this temporary order ran out of time. There was 1 year extension, and then as that extension came upon its expiration, this was recently in March of this year, betaline was permanently scheduled. And so, if you look at that procedure, it follows the same pattern where it lists the 10 substances. It does, in that case, it's an 8-factor analysis. It does the analysis, but in no case are we saying, and the isomers, which here's a list of 50 of them or however many there are. So if you look at even the permanent scheduling authority, it's following the same procedure that DEA followed here. And with regard to where isomers are placed in the temporary scheduling authority, they come into the CFR, the 21 CFR 1308.11 subsection 8 specifically. And the reason why DEA has to name the substance along with what isomers are included is because subsection H, unlike the other subsections, does not have an introductory subsection that says hallucinogenics, therefore these three types of isomers are included. it couldn't because H is a catch-all subsection that can change from time to time as temporary substances come in and expire. You couldn't have a blanket definition of isomer there because you could have within H, you could have hallucinogenics, you could have opiates, opium derivatives, things like that. And so it wouldn't make sense for DEA to have a blanket definition. Instead, what it did was to have item-by-item list, beauty loan, and its optical position on geometric and so forth. And that's how we get around having this loophole where, again, Judge Tomlin recognized you can have these clandestine manufacturers going out and making dangerous drugs to get around this.
Well, why is beauty loan?
It is, that's correct. It's basically a bath salt. And so it's these products that are come on the market that say things like plant food or cleaning products, and it says not for human consumption, but there are things that are people using are easy to get high.
Right, but the reason I'm asking that is that I think this conviction could stand, I think, and only if it was properly classed, could ultimately be a scandal on 1C.
Correct.
And so that's 1C is hallucinogens.
In the CSA, 21 USC, it's hallucinogenic. In the CFR, it happens to be subsection D because we're talking about two different ways to schedule. Congress can do it in 21 USC. DEA can do it in the CFR.
Okay.
So it's hallucinogenic in the CFR presently. And so that's correct, Your Honor. For example, let's say it was an opiate and it was just in the wrong place. We can have a problem. But it's in the correct place because it's hallucinogenic that has those three types of isomers by definition that come along with it.
Ms. Olson, how much damage would we do to the law if we bought Ms. Choi's argument here? I understand that the substance now has been permanently and theoretically appropriately permanently listed.
Correct.
So how many other Kelly cases are out there for this period of time during which the temporary listing was in effect?
You would, in effect, upend the entire Schedule 1 in CFR because factor analysis is never done for isomers. And so if you say that the DEA was required to do factor analysis for isomers, you're saying the entire Schedule 1 is invalid. And so this would not just be substances that happen to fall in this temporary scheduling, a total of 3-year window. We're talking about something significant that is the backbone of how DEA schedules substances, and by definition, only the appropriate isomers.
So it goes well beyond the failure to test ethylene.
That's correct. And since ethylene is the isomer, it would not be tested. It would be the substance itself. And DEA made those appropriate findings in its public notice that listed the 10 substances and the 3 types of isomers. And then in its factor analysis, it listed at the beginning all 10 and isomers. It went through the factor analysis. Mr. Kelly made a point that at the very bottom there's a conclusion section that looks like butylene was omitted, but the conclusion is not necessary to the factor analysis. The factor analysis is complete, and so the DEA did its job here.
Any questions?
No questions.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'd just like to quickly address 2 points, Your Honor. First, this is not a statute where there are gaps for an agency to fill. This is a brief, short, but mandatory procedure that the temporary scheduling statute lists out. It's required language. They say what the DEA shall do, what they shall consider. So it's not like there's room for the DEA to, you know, add in isomers or add to.
Can you answer or address my Philippines concerns?
Yes, sir.
I want to make sure that if I'm doing this, I just want to know how bad the damage is.
This is specific as to ethylene. All the court needs to look at is did the DEA do what is required as to ethylene, such that the indictment alleged an offense. And it's limited. There's a handful of cases in the entire country that I was able to find that address ethylene. Most of them actually address other substances where people are, you know, in trouble because they have ethylene plus MDMA, cocaine, or other things. But this case is unique in that it's only ethylene, and he's challenging the temporary scheduling procedures and what the DEA did. So I don't think that there is a concern that you're changing the law of the land. The law of the land already exists in hemp, in Caudill, this court's decision in Chester, where this court dismissed the indictment because the SORNA regulations weren't followed as to the, I'm sorry, the Administrative Procedures Act was not followed. That's all the court did the DEA follow the procedures as to Ethylone? If not, then the indictment can